Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's 7-Eleven. Free Slurpees at 7-Eleven. I think they're still doing that. We've got 68 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And a few clouds also reporting 67 degrees in Heber City. On the phone with us now from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch Back. Yeah, we reported on the free slurpees today to help you stay cool, hopefully. Checked in on some of the records we mentioned yesterday. Potential record heat, of course, for the Wasatch Front. Wasatch Back, I've got a weather station at the Park City Library saying the record high today is 94 degrees from 2002, and we're expecting 94 for Park City today. So potential record heat for Park City. Heber is expected to hit 100. Record of 97 from 2002 as well. So not just where we have excessive heat warnings across Wasatch Front, we're expecting record highs in Salt Lake, but for folks along the Wasatch Back where we're typically a little cooler, not necessarily by too much today. Overnight lows near 63 as we get into Friday. The record tomorrow is 97 for Park City. We're expecting 93. So not quite record heat again tomorrow, but well above average. Normally we're around 80 degrees. Looking at mostly sunshine tomorrow, a little bit of haze, and we'll continue to see those mid-90s into Saturday. Some clouds are going to start to increase over the weekend. We've got moisture rotating around the monster ridge of high pressure that's going to be moving east across the state. So that's what's generating these really hot conditions, but it'll also sweep up a little bit of moisture this weekend. So we're expecting partly cloudy skies Saturday and Sunday, expecting even a slight chance of showers and storms with a better chance Monday, Tuesday next week with monsoon moisture helping drop temperatures into the mid-80s on Monday for Park City. And we should see those mid-80s continue through Wednesday with that slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. So kind of that hit and miss thunderstorm development we typically see with monsoon season. Heber, again, 100 today, 101 tomorrow, still 100 degrees on Saturday. We drop into the mid-90s with partly cloudy skies over the weekend, a slight chance of storms, and then mostly cloudy skies Monday, Tuesday next week with low 90s for highs with about a 30 to 40% chance of these isolated to scattered showers and thunderstorms into the middle of next week.
Okay, looking for that cool down for sure. Thanks,
you
Nate.
Too. You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, we'll be checking in with Laura Anthony with our Mountain Trails report. Later on, Summit County Council Member Candace Hart will be phoning in. Playwright Sonia Levitin discussing the staged reading of her new play, Chain. That'll be happening next week. Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang in with a preview of some upcoming screenings. Then stay tuned also for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Park City Water Quality and Treatment Manager Michelle DeHaan, talking about the science of Park City's clean water. Later on, they'll talk with Michael Stewart with the University of Illinois about this summer's annual geology field camp that takes place in Utah. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday between 9 and 10. And on the phone with us with our Trails Report, Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation, Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting that they will have construction equipment on the Jordan L. Ridge Trail system from the Cutthroat Trailhead, so maybe use a different trailhead or just be super aware of the operations, make eye contact with the trail operator or the machine operator before you proceed past. They've got also Wasatch Trails has a trail maintenance day, a volunteer day, at Wasatch Mountain State Park on Saturday at 9 a.m. They'll be meeting at the Phosphate parking lot at the bottom of the WOW Trail. I've got Corey from South Summit Trails reporting in that they have all the trails in their area are good to go. And Dave from Basin Rec is reporting that things are hot and dry, same for pretty much all of Park City Trails. It's really dusty out there. Their team is continuing to do side veg down the Flying Dog Trail, and they're also mowing the edges of the commuter trails. Looks like they've got contractors about halfway done with the seal coat on the Millennium Trail, and they will be working the next 2 days in the Ecker Hill to Kimball area. So just be aware of that. You may want to avoid that area. I don't think seal coat's the best thing to ride or walk on. Let's see, they have a new pit toilet. They wanted to let us know that RTS will have a pit toilet opening this morning. And construction for the one-mile expansion of the Silver Creek Village Perimeter Trail is underway. So that'll be a continuation of the soft surface trail out in that neck of the woods. You might want to go check that out. It's kind of an out of the way and quiet area for dog walking and just kind of moseying along on a nice wide soft surface trail. Also, the county last night passed a code amendment for their e-bike policy, which means that if you are 65 or older or have a mobility disability, you may ride an e-mountain bike on single track. That is still prohibiting all other users on single track, all other e-mountain bike users on single track. So again, if you're 65 or older or you have a mobility disability, they have changed the code to make it legal to ride e-mountain bikes on a single track trail. That is bringing the county's code into alignment with the city's code. So now we have we have matching codes for the whole trail system. Also, they passed a 15 mile an hour speed limit on the commuter trails. Rick is reporting in that all trails in the mountain trails turf, so that's basically south of the barn, the white barn, anything, basically all of Park City's trail system is dry and dusty, so we don't have much more than that to report. We hope to see you out there. Stay cool and have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, there are two fresh bus stops at Park City's Fresh Market. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that they have bus ETAs and ADA accessibility.
Park City Mayor Nan Worrell and City Council members cut the ribbon on the bus stops Tuesday afternoon. They're some of the city's most visible stops and the city's most trafficked, says engineer John Robertson.
That it first started out with the 2018 analysis of all of our bus stops, looking for ADA compliance issues, access issues, just trying to improve our entire system.
So in addition to larger shelters, gear racks, and new information screens, the bus stops have expanded sidewalks and curb cuts. Construction took about a year, in part because the city found old electrical infrastructure beneath the sidewalk that was more complicated to remove than anticipated. But now the bus stops have fiber optic connections, which transmit bus arrival time info. The infrastructure costs contributed to the overall price tag of $1 million for each Fresh Market bus stop. Park City covered the initial planning costs, but construction itself was funded by Summit County sales taxes and a grant from the COVID-era CARES Act, which state transit officials awarded Park City last year. The grant was over $7 million, and it'll help fund additional improvements to more than 70 bus stops around Park City in the coming years. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, I have Council Member Kenneth Hart. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, let's start with where kind of Laura Anthony left off. The County Council approving the ordinance to cap speeds on Basin Direct trails at 15 miles per hour, also banning e-bikes on unpaved trails, except for those with a mobility disability or those who are 65 and over. So did you get the public comment you were hoping for?
You know, we received a little bit of comment. You know, there's an advocate for electric bikes in general, but it was pretty mild. For the most part, it seemed rather simple to us in that the opportunity to align the code with what Park City Municipality is doing just made a lot of sense. And, you know, personally, I mean, I guess for me personally, like, I really think what we need to do is have more hiking trails. I think we need more pedestrian-only trails, and I think that would relieve a lot of the conflict. But it was really obvious that, at the very least, we need to align our code so it's one system or one set of rules throughout the entire trail system.
So Basin Rec says it doesn't have the ability to enforce these new rules, so, I mean, how is that going to work?
Yeah, I think that was one of the questions. I know Councilmember Armstrong, Roger, had certainly raised that question. You know, sometimes you create these codes or these rules, and then you have no way to really enforce it. And sometimes that can almost create a problem in of itself. And so I think what I heard Basin Rec say is by having the rules in place, and then what they can do is affect, hopefully, change through education, that this gives them that talking point they need when they go out to try to educate the public. And then I think, you know, having it consistent with Park City Municipal's code so that it's, you know, the same throughout the entire trail system should make it easier. But in the end, it's going to come down to education.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion about banning all e-bikes on all single track, again, with the exception of those over 65 or with a mobility disability. You say you're in favor of lifting that ban. Why?
Well, I, you know, as someone who uses our trail systems, I mean, I've done some of our great mountain bike races like Point to Point, and, you know, I've done other racing. I've spent a lot of time riding, and then, you know me, I had a running store for a while, and I spent a lot of time on foot. I find that the conflict that I'm encountering is more often it's the fact that you're on foot and someone's on a bike, and it doesn't matter if it's an e-bike or not. And we have a certain population that is intimidated by being on trails with bikes. And there's a really wonderful opportunity. When you look at trail systems, trails can be designed for different user types. So, you know, the quick example is when I've been on trail systems that are designed for horses, there's like places to tie your horses up where you would get to the trailhead. There's horse troughs for water. If I'm on a hiking trail, there tends to be like stairs and handrails and benches and places for people to walk around, or it's wide for strollers. Well, we have our trail system. I see mixed-use trails is what we call it. And when you look at those trails, they have bank corners and whoops in it. I mean, that's really designed for a bike. That is not there for the hiker. So if we can, we have like 430-something miles of incredible single track right now. So we're not short of trails for our biking. What we are short of is trails for our pedestrians that want to walk and hike. And it doesn't need to be as extensive, and I wouldn't take anything from bikes. I would just say that I think there's an opportunity for us to develop a trail network really towards just the hikers. And I think by getting hikers and bikes off the same trails, you'll reduce most of the conflict. And then you would just have bikes, whether it's human-powered or e-bikes, on the same trail system. So that's what I would encourage, but, you know, I don't have a really strong say in this, but that would be my personal take.
Okay, let's move on to the Division of Wildlife Resources land acquisition in East Canyon. The DWR plans to purchase property north of the 910 Cattle Ranch. They stopped by to explain that acquisition. Sometimes, apparently, there's a tax impact to these type of purchases, and with that little bit of property in Summit County, do you anticipate any major impacts there?
No, I mean, for anybody following this one, it's 2.5 acres of Summit County land is part of this much larger purchase they did, which is predominantly in Morgan County. So it would change the tax income on 2.5 acres. So it's not something we're going to really ever notice or feel in our budget.
Okay. Also got an update from Summit County Fair organizer Tyler Orgill, giving an update on the activities at this year's county fair. The fair runs August 3rd through the 10th there at the fairgrounds in Colville. He was asking about bingo. Is this something the council needs to be involved in?
Well, yeah, he was asking if the council members themselves would participate in bingo. And for me, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town on vacation. So otherwise, I would love to. My childhood was spent with my grandmother going to bingo. So I would have been happy to do that. And I think some of the council members volunteered. So I think the idea is they're going to have bingo, and would council members be the one to call out the balls, you know, like B32 and such. But it seems like it might be a pretty fun thing.
Yeah. Okay. So this is kind of like the sit down with the cards and the stampers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like very much old school classic bingo. I mean, I guess for me growing up in a Catholic church, that was a pretty regular thing weekly to go to bingo. So for me, this feels really like it'd be a great time. We'll see.
All right. Is that something that happens every day?
No, they're talking about doing it on a single day. I forget which day specifically it was, but it was just like a one day thing. And it would be, I think it was with the seniors in particular, but it was a great way for the council to participate.
Great. Council member Tanya Hansen brought up the fact that the fair has taken some steps to increase its sustainability and recycling. What can you tell us about those efforts?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things I think too, like the fair itself it's really going to be in the same general location, but it'd be just moved slightly. They're doing work on the fields. And then along with that, they've implemented changes around just recycling and food waste collection. So there's a couple areas there in particular that I think Tanya was speaking to that the fair is implementing this year that should be really good or very positive.
All right. Let's see. Later on, you and council member Chris Robinson, who are on a private subcommittee discussing a public-private partnership with developer Dakota Pacific at their property in Kimball Junction, gave the first major public update on those discussions yesterday. The committee has brought in architects, engineers, and others to master plan a new Kimball Junction Transit Center area. So is this a done deal?
No, not a done deal at all. Really, the charter that we were given is a PPP feasible. And so that's really what we're looking at is like, could you actually do a private-public partnership? And so the very first few meetings, it was like Chris Robinson and myself, with, you know, our attorney, Dave Thomas, and then representatives from Dakota Pacific. And we went to, like, I think it was like two or three meetings. I'm pretty sure it's three meetings. But we quickly realized if you are going to, you know, contemplate this private-public partnership, because those meetings were like, hey, you know, how would this work? How would we even structure these meetings? Then we said, okay, well, really this needs to be a staff-led initiative and just council-supported. And we recognized, okay, you need somebody from the county. So Shane Scott, the county manager, is involved. If we're talking about, you know, a transit center, which was a main focus, and I'll talk a little bit about why, but you need Caroline Rodriguez, the executive director of High Valley there, and then you need Carl Miller from transportation, and we need Peter Barnes from our planning department. And so it was really this sort of recognition of like, okay, well, if we're going to start peeling back the layers of this onion to look at what a private-public partnership could look like, you need these people in there. And so really, we're still at that stage of, is it possible? It's, you know, or is it feasible? I mean, my sense is, yes, it's feasible, but the devil's in the details. And so maybe I'll take one step back even before doing that. Really, the kind of big change was, hey, look, you know, to the county council, what happens typically is you get these development applications, and then as a council or when planning commissions do it, you're kind of reacting to it, you know, like, does this fit your need? And then you try to get more out of an application sometimes. This was really more of a reset to say, like, look, fundamentally, what we have to do if we're going to do anything down here is we've got to really fix this traffic situation down at the 224 interchange. And that's done with UDOT, but, like, that has to be something we look at. And as a council, like, putting Dakota Pacific aside, if you just said, hey, what do you want to do down here? We're really thinking, like, you know, we know that our transportation system and the transit center is working because we see people carrying their skis from the library parking lot onto the bus all the time. So we said, hey, there's a real opportunity to create a capture parking lot here and try to get cars off the road and get them onto the bus system and take them down to the resorts. And we know we needed a larger transit center. And we're also really thinking, like, we really fundamentally just think people want more space to, like, we don't have a lot of good hangout space. We used to go to the Sundial Plaza over by Maxwell's before the buildings went in there, but that used to be like this great community space. We need spaces like that. And so that's kind of where we're coming at it. And the only way we could really execute that, oh, and we also look at the library and we're like, gosh, you know, that building is really old. And anybody who ever sees it, we literally have people in the sub-level working out of closets, like physically a closet's been converted to an office. And the only real way to sort of crack into all of that is to possibly do it through a private-public partnership. And then that was sort of what spawned this idea of, like, Chris and Canis, you go forward and see if this is possible. And so anyways, that's what really kind of kicked this off and how we got to where we're at. And last night was really just the first time where we've had this, like, hey, let's share everything we've talked about and worked on. But now we're getting closer to this idea that, hey, you know, this is possible. Everything needs to come back to, because we've been like, without boring everybody with all the details, but like if you say, hey, we want to capture parking lot, you go, great, well, how many parking spaces would the transit center need? And they go, okay, well, that's 400. And you say, well, okay, how many would the library need? Or how many would you need for, you know, just to create a place for people to park? And then you got to start looking at, like, geez, what is that in a weekday morning or afternoon or evening and weekends? Anyways, you start peeling back all those layers and it gets more complicated. That's the very exciting stuff we've been working on, is like, you know, how would you share parking? How would that be structured? That's why this idea is, could a private-public partnership work? First, that question had to be answered, and that's what we've been working on.
This shared parking model that you're looking at, you use parking for the day and then the residents use it at night?
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. So it's, and I should say, like, for everybody who's listening right now, the area that we're talking about is where the existing library is at. So that's the Sheldon Richens building, the existing transit center. And then there's an empty lot between that and the visitor center. That's the area that we're, that Leslie and I are talking about here on the radio. And that's what we call a private-public partnership, or you'll probably hear it get called PPP or P3. And anyways, we're thinking, okay, great. So we can get people off the road there and into this capture parking lot. But we haven't defined what's on the surface. That's the thing that has to come back out in the public. And we got to say, okay, look, here's options for you. We've been thinking that, hey, we really want a great plaza area, you know, that people, and we want to activate the space to make it so not just people that are like live in the immediate area would go hang out, but what's a space that people in general would go hang out and interact with? Well, what does that look like? Well, I mean, it could be oh, I don't know, it could be like coffee shops or ice cream or fountains. It could be retail. It could be office. You could put residents like affordable housing there. These are going to be the things that sort of come out back sort of to the council and the public kind of in a menu format. And this is fundamentally the other difference in a private-public partnership is we as the community or as the council get to say what we want to put on that land. And so to your question specifically, Leslie, about parking, let's say hypothetically you put some affordable housing there. You cannot typically afford to pay for underground parking with an affordable housing project. But if you did a shared model, that's where the potential comes in. And then that's why you got to start figuring out, oh, well, they would really need it at night. And if you say you had a library, they wouldn't be open at night. So then that you start figuring out, like, well, how many spaces do you need and how many hours of the day? And it gets into the, like, the details of it.
Yeah, so I'm hearing you say that you're still contemplating swapping this Richens building land for other property. But now that we own the Skull Candy building, is there really a need for that swap?
Well, it's I guess it's a yes and no answer. The idea is that, so we have the land where the Richens at, and buying Skull Candy was really a great acquisition for us. One, we can't get close to building a building for the price that we paid for that. And so the idea then is that allows us, and we're working with Skull Candy right now to finalize like how we'd share space, but we can move the library and we can move those office activities and we can move them into the Skull Candy building on the ground floor. And then that's what gives us the opportunity then to really find, you know, work with this. So the thought was like, okay, if we really say we're taking a subterranean parking garage and you do this transit center, and then depending on what goes on the surface, if it's something that, say, Dakota Pacific builds and they benefit by, then there'd be value in that. And then we would take that in turn. We would take the land to the west of the Skull Candy building and trade for the value we'd give them on that land. If, hypothetically, we built something that only benefits us, you wouldn't have that value and you wouldn't do the trade. So it kind of goes back to, it really depends on what the final kind of idea is for the space.
All right, so when do these discussions get merged about a public-private partnership with the discussions about Dakota's wider development?
I think it's, we're thinking in the next 3 months, what we expect to happen is for basically this to come out of the subcommittee. Like, we'll kind of keep fine-tuning on the subcommittee this idea of the shared parking and stuff, but we need it to come back into the public space or realm fairly quickly. So within these next 3 months, we expect to be making regular updates like we did last night, and then it will just kind of, I'm not sure the exact date, but it's within that window, it'll turn into a normal kind of public process that everybody's used to seeing. And then the idea then would be to try to create some sort of, whether it's a memorandum of understanding or some, we got to figure out some way to have an agreement to define what this looks like. And we want to try to get that done. If we can, a good thing to do would be to get it done before the end of the year. Not a development agreement or like in its total entirety, but we need to have some sort of understanding because we want to be able to go to the state legislature and ask for help in a few areas. And we'd like to be able to do that next legislative session. And, you know, that's assuming all this goes through. Right now, I would say it's very possible. Things are very different. I think conversations are just so radically different than what they had been in the past, that things are moving well. But we have to let it play its course out publicly so that everybody can weigh in and then we see where we end up.
Okay, so I hear you saying asking for help from the legislature with some of the funding for the 224 improvements as opposed to the legislature telling Summit County what it needs to do with Dakota Pacific.
Yeah, I would say to the public, you know, listening to this, I think that's the big difference is in the past up to this, you know, what we've all experienced was a very reactive process. Developer has an application, we react to it, there's pressure put on us, and, you know, like no one really liked how that was going. The difference now is it's much more, when you use a private-public partnership as a tool, we very much have a seat at the table to say, hey, here's how we want to plan this area and look at it. And then we're looking at the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan as the guiding filter, if you will, or document to say, okay, how do we do this? And so it's not, you know, like I say, I'm not trying to say everything is always all rosy, but it's a very different conversation than the way we were approaching it before.
Okay, a couple real quick things I want to touch on. The fire and fireworks restrictions. Did you not approve a fireworks ban ahead of July 24th?
You know, I had not I cannot recall one coming before the county council that I've been a part of, and I don't remember missing any meetings, so I'm assuming not. It came to us originally just as a fireworks ban around Pioneer Day, but the danger is increased, so that's a, I guess what they call a level one ban, so, you know, they really restricts what you can do, like, you can't be target shooting out in the open. You can't, or, you know, in the forest and stuff. You can't have like open fires, and except for in an improved ring and a structured area. So it's actually a more intense restriction than we were even contemplating when we went into the meeting.
Okay. So I guess to clarify, fireworks are not allowed anywhere in Utah right now, but we do have those 3-day windows before and after the 24th. So do you expect to see some bans before then?
You know, in our case, because we're recommending to the fire warden, I got to remember that was we were kind of stumbling over the language. What we're talking about is in our wilderness areas and in our forest areas, that's where these restrictions are at. So not in the municipalities, that would be governed by, you know, the municipalities. But it would have a firework ban starting immediately, as well as other restrictions.
All right. And then the council went ahead and passed the certified tax rate for this next property tax year that locks in the revenue that Summit County takes by raising or lowering that rate. Basically, property values went down this year if we don't count new growth. So the tax rate's going up.
Yeah, this is, you know, the state tax, I know you know this, but just for everybody listening, but, you know, the state tax board creates the laws in which we operate in. And what they were trying to do way back in the day is if, you know, as I say, the county takes in $78 million one year, the next year you can only take in $78 million, unless there's like new construction and stuff. But the way that then works is once the dollar amount is set, then you take all your property values in an area, in this case, the county. And then the mill levy or the percentage is assigned to make sure that you equal that amount of money. So our mill levy, you know, the percentage we pay is always going up or down every year based on property values and just how it gets distributed around the county. So it's a pretty normal thing that it fluctuates, the mill levy does. And then what they were describing, Cindy Keyes, our auditor, was describing yesterday is essentially, too, the way this works is the counties, really all counties, not just us, but they input the data into a state system and it generates the mill levies back. So it's not really controlled by us. You can't manipulate the numbers. But that's what we were certifying was that process and those numbers yesterday.
Okay, I got to leave it there. Candace, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Really appreciate it.
Candace Hart is a member of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, there will be a staged reading of the new play by part-time Park City resident Sonia Levitin. That's happening July 18th. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so first tell us a little bit about yourself. You're an author, you're a playwright, and I know reading some of your bio that civic engagement and education are really important to you.
Well, I think my whole life has been about teaching and the arts. And started writing plays about, oh, I don't know, 15 years ago. I'd been doing novels mostly, and books for children, picture books, novels. And then I discovered a theater, and I totally fell in love.
Yeah. So when you're not in Park City, where's home for you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay. And talk to me a little bit just about how different playwriting is than authoring novels.
Oh, I'm glad you asked. The theater is very different because you have only the words. You have a little bit of movement. Now, of course, in a reading, you have very little movement. So everything has to come through the words that the characters say to each other. Of course, in a novel, you have stream of consciousness. You have thought, intention. So I really love the challenge of doing it through the words, through dialogue.
Okay. Chain, is my understanding, is your third play. Tell us what that's about.
It's actually my fifth.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And Chained is about a marriage gone wrong. And my thinking, especially as I've developed this play, is that there's not one villain. When things go wrong, everyone is complicit, more or less. So it turns out that these characters really married for the wrong reason. I didn't know that when I started the play.
All right, takes two to tango. right? That's what we always hear. Tell me, what is a staged reading of a play?
A staged reading means that the people don't move around on the stage and they don't have to memorize the lines, which is terrific because they have the script in front of them in a binder. However, I'm a stickler on rehearsals. We have been rehearsing since November, so they just about know the lines anyway. But the actors have the confidence of having the script right there. And if somebody goofs, the other person can pick it up right away.
All right. So do you have what you would have in a normal play production? I mean, with a stage manager and lighting?
I have a stage manager because there are countless details. But and I had a director. I've been directing this round pretty much because we've had to change some of our actors. They couldn't all get to Park City. But they sit on the stage in a row, and we have standing mics. And as each of the actors is performing in this scene, they step up to the microphone, and it's two or three in a scene. So they're playing off each other.
All right. How many actors are involved?
We have 9 actors.
All right. And has the play actually been produced on stage, or is this what usually happens before a full-on production?
Yeah, you often do a staged reading to get a reaction from the audience, and I'm doing it also to limber up my actors because I want to bring them to the full stage, and I want to know that they will be committed and that they're good actors and that they're a team. At this point, when you do a reading, you're really team-building.
All right, so when that happens, I mean, is it something that you go out? I mean, I don't know how it works. Do you have to find somebody to do that and to produce that play for you? Or is it, you can self-publish a book, but can you self-produce a play?
Oh, you can, and I've done that. I've done full plays on a stage, a non-equity stage, which means it's under 100 seats in the theater. And then the actors get paid, not union wages. I hate doing it, but I have to do it. And even a show that is less than 100 seats with 99 actors is going to cost at least $50,000. It's amazing. So, of course, we're all looking for an angel. Someone sees the show and loves it, wants to make a little investment, or someone who has a theater and is the artistic director, and then we co-produce.
All right, so what's your hope then? Is to have a production in L.A.? Is that where you would do it?
I will go anywhere. Okay. For the arts, I will go anywhere, and I have done. Like, I wrote a book with about Ethiopia. I couldn't go there, but I went all over. I went to Israel to meet people who had been there. And I went back east to interview a woman that was involved in what I was writing. So, yeah, I'll go any place.
Okay. So I mentioned this is happening July 18th here in Park City. It's just one night only, huh?
Yes, yes.
All right. And where is it happening?
It's at the Jewish Center.
In Park City? The
yeah,
Temple
in
Har-Shalom?
Park City, yes.
All right. And how would somebody get tickets?
Oh, they have to go to Eventbrite. And just say Eventbrite Park City, click on it, and there's an ad right there about the show.
All right. Have you had some feedback?
I did. You know, I was very fortunate. The show we did in L.A., Eric Kaplan attended. He is a good friend of my son, and he, you know, is the producer of Young Sheldon and the Big Bang Theory. And so my son brought him over, and afterward I said, Dan, how did Eric like the show? And Daniel says, well, first of all, you have to know Eric doesn't like much of anything. And I'm going, oh my God. He says he loved it. So he wrote me a beautiful review. And then also the producer, Lloyd Reese, who I've worked with on a couple of other projects, he was my stage manager in one show, and he loved it. So I've got these really good reviews, and that's what we aim for. we want to have something to show another producer, theater, or the angel that's out there someplace.
All right. And as you mentioned, it's kind of a marriage gone wrong, but there's also a kind of a second element that, and that's the Jewish divorce law. What is that?
Oh, my goodness. It's very complicated. And actually, most Jews don't even realize that it exists. When you are an observant Jew, as I am, if you are getting a divorce, you need not only a civil, but a Jewish divorce, because you're married under Jewish law. And this divorce is called a get, G-E-T. And it's such a simple document that the husband gives to the wife, and it just declares that they're no longer married, and she is free to marry again. That is the premise of my story. The woman wants to be free because her husband refuses to have sex with her, basically. They have one child, she wants more kids. And in order to marry again in the community, she needs to have this get. Simple, right? So simple. Well, it's not. And the fact is, amazingly, in this day and age, there are dozens of women who are stuck, chained, because for some reason or another, this man refuses to give her the get.
So under Jewish law, wives don't give to give gets. Only the man does.
Only the man. And this is the injustice of it. And that's really why I wanted to write the play. I have a friend who's a lawyer who is working with this, constantly trying to change the law, and she has made some inroads where a lot of the rabbis require prenup that states they will give a get. But you know, religion is basically patriarchal, except for Christian Science. And so it's very hard to change, and we go through this in the play. But it's on several levels. Yes, it is on that legalistic, religious level. And why do I stay in this group when they're making my life so darn miserable? And on the other level, very male-female, very marital and human. And of course, the parents get involved, and the mother isn't religious at all. And why in the world are you staying in this marriage? And the cousin says, why are you in this cult? So there's a lot of drama.
All right. I also want to mention the fact, because I found this kind of very, very interesting. More than 50 years ago, you published a young adult novel, Journey to America. Tell me a little bit about this, because this is based on real life for you.
Yes, that's my story. My family escaped from Nazi Germany because of the wisdom and the courage of my mother. She really had to make a secret plan to get us out, because as much as the Nazis didn't want us there, they didn't want to let us go either. So when we left everything, could bring no money, 10 marks per person, and my mother fled with three girls. I was the youngest, 4 years old. She had sent my father out first because the Nazis were coming in the night and hauling Jewish men out of their homes, and they disappeared. Why? No reason, hatred. So I wrote this book, really, Journey to America, for my own children. I started writing when I was 8, made a little local newspaper, but I always wanted to be a writer and planned to be a writer, and this seemed like a good time to start when my children were little. I wanted them to understand their roots and what it meant to be an American, what it means to be free. And that's one of the passions that has guided my work. I mean, look at the play Chained, kind of come full circle. And so I wrote this book for my own children, and that they would understand the courage of their grandmother, and that would guide them through their lives. And in many ways it has. She was a very strong woman.
Well, it's a fascinating story, so I'm going to look that up. I love historical fiction in this case, right? Thank you. All right. Again, people can go to eventbrite.com. They can type in Chained or Park City Chained, and they'll be able to find a ticket for that. It's happening again on July 18th, I think, what, in 7 p.m.?
7 p.m., correct.
Okay. Anything else, Sonia, you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'm just so happy to be here. I love Park City, and I love the fact that Park City is getting more and more involved in the arts. It's just so important for all of us. It gives us a way. Well, of course, the artist expresses herself, but some more than that, it's a communication about feelings and situations that are universal. And I strongly believe that every good play, every good book, really good, will show you something about yourself in your own life.
All right, Sonia Levitin, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Good morning. On the phone now with a preview of some of the upcoming screenings coming up here in the Park City area, I've got the executive director of Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, first I just kind of want to start it with the fact that we have no movie theaters in Park City yet. Is there a need here for Park City Film to step up now?
That's interesting you asked that. That was a question that the RAP Tax Committee asked me when we were applying for our grant from Summit County. We would love to do more screenings. Honestly, part of, the challenge that I think film exhibition is facing right now is there isn't a lot of great content coming out. And the content that is coming out is kind of few and far between. A lot of the films that come out in the summer months are typically kind of big blockbusters, Inside Out 2, I think it is. Films that typically don't fit, films that would be hard for us to as a small independent theater, since they mostly go to commercial theaters. So while we would love to do more, there isn't a lot more in the independent film world for us to show, which is kind of why we've pivoted to doing, particularly this summer, the Studio Ghibli Film Festival. Redstone will come back online, my understanding is in December for the holidays, and it will be, much improved, which is great because it definitely needed that. I don't think that Holiday Village will be coming back online, just given kind of how small it is and its proximity now to a different theater owner in Redstone. But we're certainly looking at, the opportunity to do more films if we can. We'll open up, our regular season in September, and if there's enough content for us to show, we would certainly, be happy to do more films. We just are restricted. We could never become a commercial theater just given the space that we're in. It's just if folks have been to Park City Film, that it's kind of a pop-up operation where we kind of bring everything together to sell our concessions. And then of course the theater is a fixed venue. But certainly we would never be able to get to a level of 5 screenings a day, 7 days a week. That's not really our mission, but certainly not with that space, that wouldn't be possible. So there's limits on what we can do, but certainly we are looking at how do we make sure that the art of film is alive and well, continues to be alive and well in our community and give people opportunities to engage, with each other and with these great stories on the big screen.
Yeah. All right. Well, you do have some films coming up, mostly just for kids here. So this week, what have you got?
So it's kind of a mix. We are doing our pop-up film screenings around Summit County, as we've done the past few summers, which is a great way to engage folks, particularly now that we're the only movie theater in Summit County for the next few months anyway. So we have our kind of more family-friendly children's series coming up this week. We have Kung Fu Panda 4 on Friday, and that'll be on the Park City Library patio, so an outside screening that'll start around 8:45. And this, of course, is the famous series with the Kung Fu Panda Po, and he's destined to become the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace and must find his successor. In the meantime, fighting against a wicked sorceress who wants to resurrect all the villains that he's previously conquered. We have free admission to that film and free popcorn. Bring a blanket, low-back chairs. Temperatures do drop in the evening, so definitely make sure you've prepared for that. Then we're headed over to Colville on the 13th, which has been a really fun partnership with North Summit Unite. And we have a LED screen there, so we can start at 7 o'clock, and we'll be over at the North Summit Middle School in Colville. And the film over there is going to be How to Train Your Dragon, the first one, which in my opinion is the best of the series, about the young Norse teenager named Hiccup, who befriends a dragon named Toothless and changes his whole community's kind of trajectory around dragons and dragon fighting. But great partnership there with North Summit Unite. We will also, with Summit County Health. We are working with North Summit Unite on a different screening. But with Summit County Health, and so we have free food as part of that screening. So if you come, it's starting at 5 o'clock, we'll have two free food trucks from Dos Hermanos and Mr. Cluckers. Then the movie will start at 7 because we're using an LED screen. And the film will also have Spanish subtitles. So kind of a great way to engage our Spanish-speaking community over in Colville. And then our Studio Ghibli Film Festival returns on July 23rd. And this is a film, we're showing Spirited Away on July 23rd. It's a Tuesday. And this is perhaps Hayao Miyazaki's best-known film. It won an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. And this film tells the story of Chihiro, who's a 10-year-old girl, who was put to work in a magical bathhouse for spirits and demons and must figure out a way to free herself and her parents, who've been transformed into pigs, and return to the normal world. And this is... it's animated, and I think in this country, people kind of tend to designate animation to the realm of children. If you are not familiar with Hayao Miyazaki's work and Studio Ghibli, this will completely blow your mind. I mean, just the way he uses animation and his imagination, I mean, it is unparalleled. Just the depth of the storytelling, the imagination, it's unbelievable. I mean, certainly kind of mind-blowing, world-changing stories that will delight and enthrall film lovers of all ages. I can have a great conversation with my 12-year-old and my 17-year-old and myself at my advanced age just about the stories and the themes that Hayao Miyazaki brings to life in his films. And this particular film will have a speaker after the film, Dr. Susan Napier, who's a professor of Japanese studies at Tufts University. And she's written a book called Miyazaki World and Art, many articles and books about Miyazaki, kind of comparing the difference between Disney and animation in the United States versus anime and Miyazaki's genre. And she's kind of the expert in that field. So we're really excited to have her join us after the film. Tickets for students are $5. Otherwise, it's our regular ticket pricing for that. So that's really exciting. Then we go back outside. We'll be in Hoytsville on July 25th with Brave, about Princess Merida, who's determined to create her own path and must discover the true meaning of bravery to save her family. And this one's with North Summit Unite. There'll also be free food trucks there as well. It's on an LED screen, so 7 o'clock showtime. And then the last film in the Studio Ghibli series for this month is Howl's Moving Castle on July 30th, which is a Tuesday. And this is about a quiet girl who befriends a mysterious wizard named Howl, and then is cursed by the witch of the waste and turned into a 90-year-old woman. And she must board Howl's magnificent moving castle to search for a cure and try to save the world from a dangerous war of sorcery. So lots of great things coming up, certainly things that would be appealing to families and young children, but also with the Studio Ghibli Film Festival, films that are really kind of top of the, top of their genre and just, will engage, I think, film lovers of all ages, certainly, but just very complex and really a thrill to be able to bring Studio Ghibli's films to the big screen in our community.
Yeah, I've heard it's just like, don't miss one. You got to see at least one just to see what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're not sequential, right? I mean, we're trying to span the arc of Miyazaki's career, but if you don't be afraid, sometimes we're like, oh, what if I haven't seen the other ones? It's like you would absolutely just come in completely fresh and just... immerse yourself in these stories. They can stand on their own and just are, it's just a completely different world. His imagination is unparalleled. It's hard to describe it. I think to articulate it and do it justice, you have to really immerse yourself and experience it. And certainly seeing on the big screen is absolutely the way to see these films.
Okay, and that's being done in the Santee then, those films?
Yes, yep. So on the 23rd, so Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle and the rest of the series will have more screenings in August. We'll all be inside, so we have the best sight and sound. I mean, it's great being outside, but there's always some kind of, distraction potentially, and we really want to make sure that we have, the highest quality, presentation of his art.
Okay, and then you get back into the Santee with the regular weekend screening starting when?
So we'll be back after Labor Day weekend. So that this year, that'll be September 13th. Will be when we are. Or sorry, September 6th. Sorry, when we'll be back in the Santee. So usually the Friends of the Library has their book sale over Labor Day weekend, and then we return right after that. And I'll have been to a couple film festivals in the meantime and found some great films to bring back here to our community.
Okay, great, Katie. Anything else?
Just go to parkcityfilm.org. You can get all the information. We've got more screenings, of course, a number of screenings this month. We'll have some more screenings in August. The outdoor screenings are all free admission and free food, whether it's popcorn or food trucks. And then in the Santee for the Studio Ghibli films, those are ticketed events. So please get your tickets in advance, particularly for Spirited Away. Those tickets are selling fast because Dr. Napier, again, is kind of an expert in her field, and it's just really a special treat to have her here. So a lot of folks are showing up for that. So parkcityfilm.org for all that information and ticketing.
Okay. Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And once again, congratulations to People's Health Clinic, a nonprofit that provides free health care to the area's uninsured. They were the members of the Women's Giving Fund voted to award the clinic this year's high impact grant of $75,000. The other nonprofits, Mountain Mediation Center and Summit Community Gardens, each received $25,000 each. And after the winner was announced yesterday, an anonymous donor offered an additional $50,000 match to support each of those runner-up organizations. So we're talking about another opportunity for another $25,000 each. All of those donations made to Women's Giving Fund between now and July 31st will be matched with a donation.